welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like Babs Rolls Ivy, the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots radio operation, the belle of our ball, the managing editor of the Inner City News, and the hard-working host of WNHH's daily Love Babs Love Talk program. Good morning, Babs.
Good morning, Paul Beasy.
Like the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, boss of the Budget Beat, the Beauty Beat star, New Haven independent reporter, Markeisha Ricks.
Happy Friday, even though it's cold and gray outside.
It is.
The queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, the Vosy Spana publisher, Norma Rodriguez Reyes.
Hello, everyone.
The bravest man in New Haven, WNHH station manager and Donald Trump apologist. I mean, supporter, sorry. Harry Dross.
Yeah, Harry.
Listen, Harry's our tech guy. Don't.
And the exalted expostulator of extemporaneous exegesis.
Yeah.
The bossa nova, mover, and shaker. The griot of the grassy knoll.
Uh-oh.
The conquistador of
the
cussing criminal,
no.
Keeper of the cure, weaver of wellness and wisdom, mellifluous and meritocratic minor of melody, the plow driver of peace, the driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance. He's the optimizer of opulence and opportunity, the undertaker of unfiltered utterance, the erudite earl of ergonomics, the liberated lion of lucidity, the maniacal monarch of mercy, the blistering
had to
barbecue
throw that in for the carpet tunnel.
Of bringing dead bozos, our executioner of existential enemies, the alchemist of assonance and alliteration, the zealous zapper of xenophobia, a sagacious sergeant sultan of swing, the quintessential quipper of quotable quackery, the grandee of grandiloquence and gastronomics, our prize protector against pusillanimity, the distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente, the king of conspiracy concoction, deacon of the dozens, bodhisattva of battle rap, missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masses, the shaman of the shoreline, the potentate of 360 state, the recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world, the wizard of wise guy waggery, the capo of casual conversation, the first name in flame, the daring don of dope deliberation, the saltless spit, West Indian whisperer of wine, the emperor of explosive exposition, the esteemed elucidator of ebonics, top tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, the dap tone deliverer of decency, the maximal media maestro.
We should have a contest to see who can remember all of that without
of
the
bop,
paperwork.
Chess master of chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation, the beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip hop. Right Reverend of Rapture, reigning raconteur of riffitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, never late for supper, decorated, dazzling, indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mixologist Joe
Wait,
Ugly.
What about dinner dishes?
Of the show, Ugly Show in the
that.
Morning.
I want to see that.
So you should let Norman do it. She wants to do it.
Yeah. No.
You want to do that next week, Norman?
Oh, now I want you to read them.
I'm going to catch my breath and say welcome to Pundit Friday.
Really? Happy New Year, everyone.
You know, I'm so happy that we have Donald Trump as president.
Oh, my.
Actually, I'm not. I think he's destroying the world and our country. But
oh
I was so pleased. He actually did something that I could honestly, in my heart, say that I think was terrific. Like, I think he's still up to terrible things every day. Like having Jeff, every day that Jeff Sessions is an attorney general, I think is an outrage to our entire history and the rights of the majority of people in this country. But he did something this week that I thought was really good.
He went back to New York?
No.
Which is bad for New York.
He praised the healthcare system in Australia.
No, I think he's destroying the healthcare system.
No,
he's in Australia.
And he's destroying our relations with foreign countries too.
Oh, well, there's that.
But
he did something subtle and nuanced. That was perfect in every way. He owed a debt to the people who elected him, which is white Protestant evangelicals, right? 80% of them voted for him. They knew he wasn't like a Christian liver like them, but they knew correctly that he'd give them a Supreme Court justice. Mm. They also knew that he promised to repeal something called the Johnson Amendment, which prevents preachers from endorsing candidates in church, even though they've never, ever gone after a single religious figure whoever endorsed someone, except for one liberal who endorsed a Democrat. That's what's so ironic about this whole thing. But at the same time, I thought this was going to be trouble because they also wanted him to lift restrictions against religious organizations from discriminating against gays and lesbians and failing and businesses that out of religious conviction didn't want to serve gay customers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he finally gave them their executive order and they weren't happy.
Right.
Because first he split the baby in the perfect way.
Yep.
Because what he did is he repealed the Johnson Amendment. This is my bugaboo, and I want you guys to push back on me because I have an unpopular position on this. Mm-hmm. I think that even though I agree with people that's not a good idea for ministers and rabbis and imams to preach politics at the pulpit, I think they have the right to do that. I think it's up to religious congregations to decide if they want their people to do that. And I think the whole Johnson Amendment, named after Lyndon Baines Johnson when he was a senator, mm-hmm. was created to punish Lyndon Johnson's enemies who were trying to stop him from being a senator and happened to be religious figures. So I always thought this was bad law. I thought it was unconstitutional and dangerous. So I think it was good they wanted to lift that, but at the same time, so they claim that's what they wanted, but they've never really been prosecuted for it. And you can really go to church, to the pulpit, and promote whoever you want. Mm-hmm. But he did not give them permission to discriminate against gays and lesbians, which was, I think, the real rule in the road. I've always felt that deep down, while he hates women, he's nasty to them, and while he's been a racist who's horrible to racial minorities, and that he's got a Ku Klux Klan attorney general, Donald Trump, deep down, doesn't hate gay people, I believe. He doesn't have a problem with that. He's fine with everybody having sex, whatever they want to do it. But what more important with civil rights, I think that Ivanka and some of the other people close to him didn't want him to go after gays and lesbians.
Right. Correct.
And that he did something nuanced here, that he gave something to his base that I think his base deserved, which was their First Amendment rights from the pulpit. But he did not give them the right to discriminate against gays and lesbians. Any thoughts here? Because I don't think my position is going to be agreed in full with anybody here.
I agree with you as far as it goes for the gays and lesbians, where he did give pushback. And where did that come from? Probably from Ivanka and her husband, Jared, because they do have that that history. Plus, they powwow a lot with liberals, a lot more than you think. So did Donald Trump until he decided to run for president. But as far as it goes for the Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Johnson Act, I think that is a necessity because our Constitution is built on separation of church and state. And I think it should be a separation of.
It's also built on freedom of speech. And you should be able to go wherever and say what you think. Now, I've been to minority churches and nobody follows that. Nobody follows that.
That's
they go
true.
Up on the pulpit.
You're right when you
No, but I'm saying nobody follows it.
Right.
That's not true. We don't carry on like that at my church.
I've seen it in
But it's not a common practice.
A lot of people do what you do. At our synagogue, we don't go up and make a speech for this candidate, and I think that's the right way to do it.
We don't allow it at our church.
My only question, Babs, is that I think it's up to you guys not to allow it. I believe religion is done better when politics isn't mixed in.
We don't.
But I don't think the government should be stopping the churches from doing it. If you want to have some politicized church,
then why do we have separation of church and state?
Because I don't think you should restrict.
I think he's talking about where the separation is.
You shouldn't discriminate against religion and your right to practice a religion with church and state. You shouldn't have government enforcing religion like defunding Planned Parenthood for religious reasons.
Right.
You shouldn't be restricting or favoring one religion over another, discriminating against Muslims. But I don't think you should restrict people's rights to talk about politics however they want from the public. I'm with Babs. I don't think our congregation should be so political, but I think that's for us to decide. If some people want to go to, let's say, the Nation of Islam, which I consider a political group, not a religious group for the most part, if they want to do that, I think that's their right. And I think that it was done for nefarious purposes in Washington.
So basically you're saying that should be between the church and their leadership as opposed to the government saying you just can't do that.
I think that is separated church and state, Joe. Yeah. Now, the argument, though, that comes back at people like me is that we give them tax breaks. So if you have tax breaks, we shouldn't let you then lobby the government for more tax breaks. But when we give tax breaks to other industries, we don't restrict their right to speak. We do restrict their right to give money, which we should, because I don't think money is speech the way that the Supreme Court has versus Vallejo decision.
We often talk about this free speech stuff, but we do have limits on it altogether. I mean, the basic is can't just yell.
I mean, we give tax breaks as to colleges and universities.
Those are free speech.
Politicians speak there all the time.
But Joe is saying to your parishioners, who, by the way, are human beings with a brain and don't have to follow what you're telling them, telling your parishioners, I like so-and-so for mayor or president, vote for them. Is that the same thing as fire in a crowded theater?
I tell you why it's worse. Here's why.
Worse than endangering people's lives?
No, I tell you. Let me.
I mean, I think Joe has a point, because I think people follow what their ministers say.
Correct. And I've been in churches, the way that they get around that is that the pastor doesn't get up and say, this is my homeboy, vote for him. What they say is, somebody is coming to speak to us, we're going to allow them 5 minutes to speak. And even the politician doesn't say necessarily, I'm running for this office, vote for me.
But
he might get up and say, I'm a friend of this church, or I attend this church, or whatever, and you know, I believe in these things.
And they all come to Varick.
Yeah,
and they let everyone come at Varick. At Varick,
they're very clever.
They don't come at
my.
We don't allow them to come to our.
But again, it's a matter.
I mean, they could come and worship.
But I've also been in churches that had very like good substantive debates about: are we going to let? And if we let this politician, do we have to let the opposing candidate?
But again, isn't that for them to debate?
I think so.
Rather than the federal government,
I think.
But Joe, though, we wanted to hop in and give the other side.
No, I would say that, you know, just letting the person come out and say something on your pulpit actually is giving an endorsement. But let me just go back. Most people get their information based on a candidate, I'm speaking on a commercial. And if that commercial has an endorser on there, people follow. So it's the same principle. You're literally branding yourself.
But why
with
shouldn't that
person.
Be legal?
Excuse me?
It's a one way we vote is someone we trust and believe in tells us, I've looked into this, this is what I think. I think that's fine.
Yeah, but that's good. But a couple issues with that. I mean, first of all, it's...
I mean, legally. Again, I'm with Babs that we don't want this in our congregation.
Right. And we should not have...
But that's up to us.
No, it should be... Look, I applaud Babs Church for not having that and just making it a blanket. But what about the people who don't want to endorse this person? And they're coming to church for their spiritual sanctuary.
Then they should go to a different church. They should go to a church that isn't politicized. But I don't think the federal government should tell them what church to go to.
See, no, they shouldn't tell them what church to go to. But what if they like the church for whatever, for a lot of other reasons, but then they have to deal with this?
Then they organize a faction of people who want to either change the rules in their church and say, look, we don't want politicians coming to our church. But again, that's not for the government to decide. That church decides that, is what Paul's saying.
Well, I'll decide that we are listening to Pundit Friday and WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, LodgeDNewHiddenPen.org. We are talking Pundit Friday. Now, Donald Trump also celebrated yesterday because he finally got the U.S. House of Representatives to narrowly approve a bill that will succeed probably in throwing 20 million people off of health care and have people with pre-existing conditions no longer
and
have
raise
the
premiums
the
for those of us who have health care through our employers.
Okay. And those of us who have pre-existing conditions might not get healthcare at all, or we'll have to pay tons of money. So I'm obviously not applauding him for that. I was thinking, I want to give Harry a chance to say why he's happy about it. But first of all, first of all, are you happy that it passed?
I'm happy that something passed. I know this isn't going to be the law that gets signed in. I think everybody's, you know, getting hysterical about something that won't be the law. But yeah, I'm happy something passed.
Why? I got to hear this. I got to hear something passed. That means you just wanted anything to go for team reasons.
No, I'll tell you if I'm happy about the law when the law passes.
But you just said you were glad that something passed.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad
your team won.
I'm glad my team won.
Okay, all right. So at
now,
least you come.
Now let me
at
tell
least
you
honest
now
about
that
it.
Republicans aren't my team, but
yes, they are.
The team,
you might not want to claim your
I'm
team,
with
but
the team that's with against Obamacare,
which is of course the Republican team.
But listen, Joe.
Yes.
Let me tell you something.
Why is
we
Obamacare?
Let finish.
Wait. We forget how Nancy Pelosi and her group celebrated when they passed their version of Obamacare, which then went to the Senate and. It's going to happen exactly what happened under their procedure.
No, it's
and
not.
They celebrate. Yes, of course it is.
No,
it's going to go to the Senate.
It's going to go to based on that, based on what on
no,
the procedure.
No, the Senate will make their own version, and then they'll have to
send it back for reconciliation.
Reconciliation. They'll figure it out in reconciliation, Joe.
No, they're going to go back to reconciliation.
That's how it works.
But then the House is going to have to vote on it again. Yes. And then
and they
send
have,
it back to the Senate. And
no,
if
the,
they pass
the house,
it, then it goes to the
House.
The House
has to pass the Senate version. The Senate is not full of wackos like there are in the Congress.
But let me ask you a question. You celebrated something passed. What is this whole thing about?
You know what? I'm celebrating
what are you
that,
to benefit?
That the Freedom Caucus what didn't get in the way this time.
What
That's
are
all
you,
I'm celebrating.
But this is a worse budget than the previous one.
No.
This is going to kick more than 24 million people off. Pre-existing conditions
I love
are
that
on.
Kick 20 million people
and
off.
And it's a fact.
But now listen. Now listen very carefully because there's a lot of people who have insurance who didn't want to pay for insurance. There's a lot of young people out there.
Granted, but there's a lot of people who have to pay for car insurance but don't want to.
Your government forced them into paying
just
insurance.
Just like car insurance, there's a lot of people who don't want to pay it, but they do.
They'll come off the rolls voluntarily. No, and you guys are saying kick them off.
That is no, that is not correct.
It is correct.
No,
it is correct.
People are going to lose because of Medicare.
Okay,
Medicare.
So you're arguing about the advisability of the mandate, which the people like Harry is an individual rights question why she'd have to buy it. And for people on our side is, where is the side of healthcare? Everybody's insurance goes up if the people who are at the point in their life where they pay less aren't in too, and that most industrial countries do that in the same way we have car insurance. But I was thinking of there was a local angle.
This isn't the Harry and Joe show.
No, it's not the Harry and Joe show.
When is there going to be a Harry and Joe show? We already named it.
No, but however,
two ball guys, first of all, arguing.
The real reason, let's face the real reason why these guys are against Obamacare, if we want to call it, is the Affordable Health Care Act. The main reason is because the top 2% of this country, which my family fall under, but I still say the top 2% of this country.
It's a new name for him. Sorry.
Oh God!
Threw you off.
The top 2% of the nation is paying into this healthcare plan, and they should not. It's how they look at it. They feel like they should not have to pay for people who have all this ailment. There's going to be a $348 billion tax fall from the wealthy.
You're not talking about the budget.
Their budget.
We were talking about healthcare.
From healthcare. Yeah. It's going to be, that is going to kick back. It's a tax fall. It's a tax break.
So there's also an impact here in Connecticut. I was talking about this with my wife last night. So we always feel we're protected in Connecticut, right?
But we're not.
Because one thing they're doing is they're going to roll back the increase in Medicaid, mm-hmm. which is health insurance for poor people that came under, and working class people that came under Obamacare. Mm-hmm. This is going to give permission to states that want to not expand Medicare, not have to do it in the rules that were given by Obamacare. So my wife and I are saying, well, you know, we always feel safe in blue states, right? Well, we'll just continue to do it here. But then my wife pointed out that the Senate now, state Senate is even divided between Democrats mm-hmm. and Republicans. And in 2 years, we have a governor's election that, less than 2 years, that I think could very well go Republican. We could be looking in Connecticut at another state that will vote to get rid of, let's say, guarantees for pre-existing conditions, which is going to change the life of tens of thousands of people.
It will change my life because I'm on Medicaid.
I am the
working poor, and I have pre-existing conditions. Right.
It's not just Medicaid people. Everyone pre-existing conditions.
And before the AKA, the ACA came, mm-hmm. I was paying out of pocket for all of my health insurance.
Just imagine.
Paying out of pocket for all the medications.
So
it is unbelievably hard, and negotiating with each doctor for each thing,
right?
And
then have to settle for whichever doctor is going to give you the best deal. You're shopping your healthcare like you're buying potatoes,
and it's exhausting to do that.
It is exhausting.
What bugged me is the Democrats in Congress yesterday, when the Republicans passed it, they said, "Sha na na na."
Absolutely.
Hey.
Goodbye.
Now they're so sure that because the Republicans passed this, mm-hmm. people whose now health insurance is going to be cut mm-hmm. will retaliate against them, kick them out. What I can't believe is they're so cocky. They were so cocky 2 years
they
ago.
They ain't got no reason to be cocky.
Do you remember how cocky they were
Trump 6 months
until 2 minutes before the polls closed.
Correct.
Last election day.
Right.
Democrats and all the media, the liberal media,
yep.
was so sure
yep.
it was a fact
exactly.
that Donald Trump could never become president. They were gloating.
Mm-hmm.
They're so sure that they could make this argument about people's self-interest, which maybe people just define it differently. For instance, like, it's not Obamacare that's unpopular. The real program is popular, especially in red states. People like the Affordable Care Act and the help they get. It's just the Republican spin machine funded by the Koch brothers and others has somehow convinced people that black guy's health care program is stealing from you that's giving you that help. So they hate Obamacare, but they love the Affordable Care Act. I don't know why the Democrats are so convinced that when they go back.
They should always behave like underdogs
right.
because they after this election, they shouldn't think that they're going to win anything.
Well, let me ask Norma, do you think the Democrats should be happy that the Republicans voted to get rid of Obamacare with the belief that there's going to be this uprising at the polls against them because people will be so upset they lost their health care? Like, Babs, can you give them a mic?
I think basically what's happening here is that every, you know, Obamacare, it has the name of Obamacare. And Trump being the person that he is, he wants something to be called Trump Care. I think that has the major push on this. He wants to take the name of Obama out of this and put his name to it.
Well, you know, I asked you this question, Norma. Do you remember how during the election, mm-hmm. white liberals were so sure they had this in the bag because they say, of course, blacks and Latinos are going to hate Donald Trump. He's against them. Look what he's saying about Latinos, rapists, and thugs. It turned out he did quite well with the Latino vote. He didn't win a majority.
Like 14%.
I think it was more than 14%.
But that's because of the I-4 card.
Oh, no. With Latinos, like 20.
But you know what? Let me tell you
plus.
Something.
So, Norma, are the
Democrats are in serious trouble with the Latino community. You know, they seem to think the Latinos are very liberal, right? And they're not. They're not liberal at all.
Well, and so, yes.
And you know what? It's been the Republicans who have been wooing the Latinos, not the Democrats.
But Paul, you remember last year, what did I say? I said if they did not pick one of the Castro brothers, she is not guaranteed to win this thing. I was very clear about that. I don't see why they did not pick the Castro brothers.
So there's
brothers.
A new book about where Hillary Clinton lost. Where's the they forgot the chapter, She Listened to Joe Ugly.
That's it. And that's the main chapter.
But if she listened to Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, broadcast at 103.5 FM, live stream at newhavenindependent.org, she would have listened to Joe Ugly. She would have won the election.
Look,
From day one, she thought she had it win.
Exactly.
From the day that she announced that she was running for president of the United States, she acted as if she was president already.
And her supporting cast did the exact same. You had the guys of Robbie Mook. First of all, once you're over three, you need to stop with the Robbie. The Robbie Mook, your name is Robert. No, Rob. I'll settle for. But Robbie Mook, if you ever see this guy in an interview, you realize why she lost. He's so dismissive of explaining things. He literally said, I believe it was on Meet the Press, he literally said something like, oh, well, they'll get that. I look at it and I no, they wouldn't. Explain it to the American people. Don't have this attitude.
So you see, you watch MSNBC and you must be arguing with your TV all the time because they're the most cockiest people, and they were sure. I remember I was watching Rachel. Mm-hmm. I won't say Mad Cow,
but you did. Well, go ahead.
I'm not a nasty woman, Paul. Cut it out. No, I remember her being so cocky up till 9 p.m.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Listen, you know,
I want to go back.
Wait, we need to commemorate this moment. I think Harry and Joe just agreed about
something. No, I totally agree with him. I was screaming, these guys.
I just want to go back to Norma's thing. It wasn't about he wants Trump care or anything like that. The Republicans have been saying for 8 years that they're going to get rid of this thing. Now, Paul, it wasn't because he was a black guy, but I will say
yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
Yes.
Look, let me tell you something.
And there goes the disagreement.
Now, here it is. Because my niece, I'm going to give you an example. Just one example.
Okay.
My niece who voted for Obama because of Obamacare. And, you know, because most people out there thought it was going to be single payer. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they were so naive because the message was so convoluted. Now, she voted for Obamacare. Obamacare passed. Her job cut her to 29 hours so they don't have to cover her health care.
But that was happening anyway. That was already happening.
It wasn't happening.
Wait a second. Harry just said something deep. She thought it was going to be single payer like most industrialized countries in the world.
Right.
In fact, there was a moment during the Obamacare debate where Obama and the Democrats did want to have a form of single payer called Medicare for All.
Right.
And it was Joe Lieberman along with Republican senators who killed that. Harry, for the record, Mr. Trump supporter, would you support a single payer health system?
Oh, I gotta hear this.
No.
But the president does.
Wait.
The president does. He said it last night. Absolutely.
Mr. President Trump always puts his foot in his mouth. It doesn't
mean
anything.
Puts his foot in his mouth. Oh, but, now all of a sudden it means nothing.
Now I'm just saying, her job cut her to 29 hours. Okay? Then she couldn't afford she had to choose between paying for college because she's been putting herself through school.
I understand, Harry. I'm not
saying that was under Obamacare. And none of you complained about that.
Because Obamacare, what they wanted, they kept the greedy insurance companies getting their take and have it be private insurance where these rules were put in, and we kept it with private employers giving the insurance so they can go to 29 hours. What about single payer? She'd be fine. If we had single payer, she could afford to do everything you just said. College, healthcare, not even sweat about it.
Harry, that's called reform.
That would never happen.
But you guys don't even want to talk about reform.
Look, she has pulmonary issues. Yep. So
okay.
And she can afford to get on a long line under a single payer plan where they would never get to.
It's not going
to
be a long line. Whoa, whoa,
Let me tell you, Canadians go through that all the time. Now,
which
hold on.
Canadian?
Canadians overwhelmingly said they wouldn't trade their system for anything.
Anything.
Yet long lines are all. That's been consistent.
Their health care.
They do what?
What did you say,
Markeisha? I said, and they've been consistent about that. Like, when we've been going through this debate, I don't know a Canadian who, like, I watch a lot of, like, financial planning videos.
Right.
And a lot of them are from Canadians. And when they talk about not only their, like, teacher retirement systems and, like, I'm sorry, I'd like to move to Canada right now. I'll take me some of that.
Now, what if you were fasting for 8 days? Would you get to get a doctor and a single payer? Because Markeisha had a story today in The Independent that one of the 8 fasters at Yale who are protesting Yale's refusal to negotiate a new contract with their new union for graduate student teachers has stopped fasting because of an unspecified medical problem, and someone has taken her place. And from the beginning, the fasters have said, we're not going to die over this. They're getting very weak. But they said, we're not going to kill anybody over this. As soon as someone's medically in trouble, although I don't know why they're so confident they could always catch it in time. Medically
well,
trouble,
they do have
we're going to swap
somebody
out
there
so
monitoring.
They did.
No, but you got to keep testing people's.
So in any case, critics say this isn't a real fast that doesn't count. They say you don't get to tell us what counts and not counts. We're doing what we want. What I thought was interesting this week was President Salve weighed in. This is the second week. It's become a national story. Yale University President Peter Salve said, look, two things are different here. At Harvard and Columbia, where they have a graduate student union, they had a majority of the graduate students vote for it. But at Yale, the NLRB allowed just 9% of the graduate students to vote, so that only 228 out of 2,600 PhD students got to vote. So only part of them are. So we believe we have a right to go to the NLRB and argue why we shouldn't have to start negotiating because we think the election was messed up. The union says you've already been there once. They said no. You're stalling for a Trump appointee. But in either case, Salve said, this is not the way to settle an argument. If you don't agree with something we're doing about what decision the NLRB should make, you shouldn't threaten to do harm to yourself as a way to win your argument. You shouldn't say that if you don't do what we want, we're going to go fast and get sick and face death or potential death because you don't agree with us about an administrative procedure and argument back and forth, two reasonable positions. The right way to do that is go through the proper channels of the NLRB. He says threats of self-harm have no place in rational debate when an established dispute resolution process still exists. Respect for law and legal process, civil argument, persuasion, these are the hallmarks of airing and resolving disagreements at a university. The union, Local 33 of the Unite Here, says that you're not playing fair. We already went through a process for years. We won an election. You might not like how it took place, but we won. You're now stalling and spending a lot of money with lawyers to try to get out of it while this right-wing new anti-labor president who you supposedly don't support on your other values lets you cheat. Who's right?
Well, first of all, to tell someone how to protest is totally crazy to me. To tell someone that...
What about how to resolve a problem? Like, for instance, if someone works for Joe Ugly,
yeah,
and you say, you're not allowed to come in here with a gun and shoot people, but they said, we think you're really wrong, and unless you give me my job back, I'm going to kill myself. Is that the right way to resolve that dispute, or should you go to the state labor board?
If this person chooses that way to protest, that's their right to protest. I mean, at the end of the day, you have your right to protest.
I'm not talking about rights. Is that a good idea how to do it? Should you therefore say, I'll change my mind of the merits. You can come here and shoot people when you come work for me, because otherwise you're going to hurt yourself if I don't do what you want.
No, but orange and apples. What we're looking at here is the individual, if working for me, decide that they're going to come in and shoot them, you know, shoot up the place. Obviously, they're looking to commit a crime.
You're right. That's ours. What if they came in and said, Joe, I'm going to scream whenever you're on the air because I don't like the way you're running the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take the mic and not let you talk.
Right.
You say you can't work. I don't like those rules for work, and I'm not going to negotiate about this. They say, unless you negotiate that rule with me, I'm going to go sit on the green with a sign, Joe Ugly Stinks, and I'm not going to eat for 5 years. Or, you know, I'll slowly die. Should you therefore let someone come in and run your organization the way you don't like because
they did that?
Or should you take it to a state labor board that can adjudicate it?
No, if the person chooses to protest, that's my point.
I feel like none of those are good examples.
No, I'm on the level. If the person chooses to protest, I mean, if they choose to go on the green and sit out there, go out there and have a seat. You know, do whatever you want to do.
So you think? What about you, Markeisha, or Babs, or Norma, or Harry? Do you think President Salve has a
I'm definitely with
with Joe on the you can't tell people how to protest, right? Like, yeah, they're never gonna, particularly if you're against what they want,
right,
you're never gonna agree with their protest.
Exactly.
They could just say, we're gonna go around and sing nursery rhymes,
right,
every day in your office,
like the unions,
so you can't get any work done, yeah, unless you have us arrested, but we're just gonna keep doing that every day.
But just like, and you're right, the union, he still wouldn't be for criticizing that, the way that Yale goes about it, which is rather than negotiate, continuing to delay filing more and more appeals at the NLRB.
And could they come to the table and then just say, okay, we've negotiated, we're at an impasse? Like, could they just come to the table if they don't want them,
Norma,
out there starving themselves?
Norma, can you take the mic?
What is the name of the arbitrator?
Arbitrator.
I really believe it's time for an arbitrator to come in to try to see how both groups, because obviously they're at a standstill. Both groups are doing drama, lots of drama, that to the point that it can be detrimental, and it's making New Haven look bad. Not only Yale, but it's making the city of New Haven look bad. And I think they need to call in arbitrators to come in to an agreement.
So
I
Yale
mean, we're adults
say we're
here.
Yale says we're doing that. We're going through an appeals process at the National Labor Relations Board that will review whether we're right that you shouldn't have had an election that has only 9% of the graduate students voting. The graduate students say you're actually distracting from, you've already lost in the part of the election. You've lost when NLRB first took this up. You're just looking for ways of delaying giving us our rights. So Yale feels they're going to arbitration. The union feels that they're not. So I guess that's part of the impasse.
But you know something, Paul, when you look at it, it's like just as if somebody is looking for an appeal process. I mean, you don't have the right to say how the appeal process is going to work. I mean, you sit and wait for what's going on with the appeal process. So that, if that's what they're waiting on for Yale to come through, if Yale say they're going to go to, they're waiting for
NLRB in Washington.
Right, to say what it is. I mean, well, that's part of the appeal process. It's,
yeah.
Okay, so that you sit and wait under the appeal process. And like you go all of a sudden say, hey,
so you're,
you know,
okay with it. So no need for a hunger strike?
I really don't see the need for it.
I guess is there a question of
opinion?
is the strike too soon? Because if they do go through this appeals process and, you know, Trump appoints somebody who's going to rule against them. Mm-hmm. Then what leverage do they have?
Right, exactly. You
so
don't
now
burn
I'm back
leverage
with Joe that they have a right to pick their tactics too. If they,
yeah,
they
absolutely,
beat
but
them,
they do.
Bring
but I'm thinking more about the effectiveness. Right. I don't have a problem with them having a hunger strike. I just want to know when's the right time to do it.
Is this a unique situation, or have other prestigious universities gone through this whole process?
They
and
have,
how?
Yeah.
And how have they? And how have they dealt with it?
Said the difference was, at Harvard and Columbia, not mm-hmm. to mention the public universities, when they had an election, all the graduate students voted. Mm-hmm. What they allowed them to do at Yale, because the union does not have the support of the majority of graduate students, they let the union pick 9 out of 50 departments to have the election in, so that you have a separate little union for the 6 that voted for them, mm-hmm. rather than the 2 that we're not sure and 1 that didn't. So Yale's saying, to be a true election, it really should be all the graduate students, and that would be like our other institutions. The union's saying, we made a legal case that those departments are different from each other, so they each need their own union, and the NLRB supported us in that. Obama appointees supported them. So that's what they're arguing about. So it's a very good question you asked, and one side argues it is like the other institutions, so they should negotiate. The other side argues it's very different from those other institutions, so there's a legitimate legal issue here. The tactics are interesting. I give the Local 33 a lot of credit for sneaking when Yale wasn't looking and getting that great shed put up where everyone's become a great communal public space, or like Occupy New Haven across from the president's office at Guy B. Plaza. They actually did a decoy. They had 2 demonstrations to keep the police and Yale officials somewhere else where they snuck in with this long-planned, wonderful shed and put it up, which I think that's a great spirit of protest. What do you think Yale's going to do now? Because they didn't take it down right away. Now they got national media where these, you know, famished protesters are sitting underneath the shed, even in medium warm weather.
I'm giving it one more week.
Graduation's coming.
You got it, baby. Graduation's coming.
But they'll look bad if they take it down. They'll look like they're not for free speech.
They were supposed to look bad the last time when it was Occupy New Haven. One more week, baby.
What do you think, Markeisha Babs? What would you do if you were Peter Sally?
I would just leave it up.
You look good then.
I don't know if it's about looking good. I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, mm-hmm. if a liberal university cannot sort of rise to the occasion to be better, mm-hmm. then there's no hope for us anywhere. So
look, I think, you know,
let them do it.
As we were discussing
and,
it.
And, you know, send some water out there.
There you go. As we were communicating on Community Spotlight earlier.
They need to send some blankets. It's cold outside.
Or send some blankets and some umbrellas.
They claim they're worried about the protesters are sending a doctor to make sure they're okay. They're saying, we don't need your doctor. We got our own medical people. You're not really, if you're really concerned, you negotiate. They say, well, that's not the right way to do it. But you're right. What if they sent them water?
Send them water.
Be careful. Or remember snack. The last
you know,
time.
By the way, that's what spreading. Kingman Brewster would do. Kingman Brewster was present at Yale during the protests, the big protests, and where they were going to burn down Yale. And he opened his doors to the protesters, fed them breakfast, and said, I listened to what they say, and I agree with their argument that a black revolutionary can't get a fair trial in America. He earned the ire of the president of the United States, but he prevented New Haven from burning down in its core. And I think he modeled a way that an enlightened university allows all point of views to be heard, even if it challenges the university, without feeling a need to quash it. I think Babs is right on the money. If Yale believed what it said, if it hasn't become just like any other Fortune 500 corporation that's all just about generating new money and their image, which I think they have, but if they haven't...
Well, maybe this is their moment to sort of reevaluate that.
They would celebrate that this protest structure is outside the president's office, having people coming to study, perform music, debate ideas. You have the Republicans coming to argue against them by barbecuing meat, so they try to get the smell of discouragement.
That's cruel.
Well, what did you think when you went there, Markeisha? What did you think of their 33 Wall Street
gym? Did you say barbecue meat?
Yes.
Yeah, they did.
They had a barbecue.
Right, the young Republican,
to kill
Republicans.
The smell?
Yeah.
No, to break the fasters.
To try to weaken their resolve. Oh. Then they sent 200 pizzas.
They
had 200 pizzas ordered from Yorkside to the... But what they did, the protesters said, well, we're not going to have the pizzas, but there's a free food giveaway for the hungry on the green. They sent all 200 pizzas to the green.
Oh, this is getting interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been clever.
This protest is like...
This is intellectual.
Yeah.
This is very intellectual. Clever.
It's definitely been clever.
Clever protest.
Chess move protest.
Yeah.
Yes. Over here.
Yeah.
I would cater a buffet right in front of them.
You would, Harry. You certainly would.
And, you know...
Because you're like King Joffrey.
You have to think about them, right?
King Joffrey over there.
They should eat.
King Joffrey, thank you.
I'm not going to lie. If they did that and I was protesting, I'd cross and say, hold on, fellas. I'll be right back.
The truth is, if you haven't eaten for 8 or 9 days, if you try to eat too much, you'll get sick.
Yeah,
true. That's why I'll be right back.
I just want to take out the water. So, and this is getting interesting. Melissa Etheridge, a Grammy winner, was
yes,
in town for
she
concert.
Went brought some water.
She went to brought them bottles of water to help the fasters. Mm-hmm. And this is what some of our commenters said. I'm really glad Etheridge brought the Pampered Yalee's Fiji water, among the most expensive water on the planet, versus the bottled tap water at a fraction of the price in New Haven. Fiji water is bottled inland in the South Pacific, shipped to LA and trucked across the country. Think about the carbon footprint.
Then
as Lookout said, drinking bottled water trucked from across the globe. They are not roughing it. You know, we've talked about this on the show. I don't understand why anyone in New Haven, where the water's terrific, we have really great public water. Why is anyone drinking bottled water? And why
even
would
though, like, I know, like, that don't that was start? Referenced the Fiji water, but the actual, the Fasters, they have, I think, their own reusable water bottles. They're not
I know,
drinking,
but
like, because that's mentioned in Chris's article, the Nagaline bottles.
Paul's on another point here. So, shout
out to New Haven tap water. It's pretty tasty.
Well, you know, that's why we live in America, because we can choose to drink bottled, fancy bottled water or not.
But don't we care about the environment? Don't we care about not destroying
the environment? If we cared about the environment, then we wouldn't build so many buildings, because building of buildings is the biggest threat to the environment.
And we give up our cars.
You make a choice every day, whether it's cars, whether you're going to do something. And sometimes you do have to
and ride the vision trail.
But why would you do something that gets you water that's not as good? And cost you money to destroy the environment when you could support public resources like drinking water.
Paul, how much bottled water do you consume?
Not a lot, because...
Zero. So therefore, you can't say...
Tap water.
I've tasted it.
Yeah. All of it?
It took half a sip. The minerals that the regular water...
Well, can you give Norma the mic? Yeah.
No, the truth is that bottled water doesn't have the minerals.
And your dentist wants you to have that fluoride that's in your
the
water.
Fluoride
and the process
even though there are people who are like, no to fluoride.
After a certain age, you don't need fluoride. But
there you go.
That's
but
just,
you do need
that's just
Friday,
a dental hustle.
The children. Think of the children, Beth.
Home for Community Radio, 103.5 FM.
Those work.
We're here with the pundits, great pundits of the universe.
They won't have health insurance, though.
I was talking to some of you guys the other day about someone you guys know really well who was involved in the anti-apartheid protests at Yale in the 80s when they built a shanty in the same spot at a protest shanty that Yale didn't know what to do about when they're trying to get them to divest from South Africa when it had apartheid government. And an enraged Yale alum who hates the left came and burned down the shanty
overnight
and got arrested. And they said that one thing the protesters learned this time was they have someone sleeping.
Don't put wood?
No, they have
wood. No, there's wood. There's wood at the shed.
But they had no one sleeping in it overnight.
Yeah, because people are crazy.
So now they have people sleep. The protesters are there all day with their supporters, and they sleep in a church. And other people take turns sleeping overnight so that if Yale wants
God
to
bless
come
them tonight,
take them down,
gonna be cold.
They're going to fight it. So they feel like they have learned something over time about how to protest outside Yale.
Like, I know you said, know how warm it is right now? That's how warm it is. That's the high.
Okay, I got another dilemma. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just one second. Somebody mentioned about getting blankets over there. Remember the last time blankets were offered up in this country, okay? Let's be very careful about what you accepted.
The indigenous among us don't appreciate the whole blanket giving.
Exactly.
My bad.
What happened? No, I don't remember.
Smallpox?
Blankets.
White folks gave indigenous people smallpox blankets and killed them.
Yo, okay, no blankets. Don't send any blankets.
Be careful with the blankets. It carries a lot.
Should they bring buckets of water?
What about shortcuts?
Okay. Oh.
Markeisha Ricks wrote an article in the
Independent. Is there a vision about shortcuts?
So when we had the Special Olympics in 95 and they said it was going to bring all these benefits to New Haven, which ended up being garbage, they had the World Games here. But what they did in conjunction with it was, this was at the beginning of the time, which is now it's popular in New Haven, but people back then were just beginning to talk about, how do we make this a bigger city to bike around and walk? And how do we reclaim the landscape from big highways that, you know, were built up? So this little cut through that's under the highway overpass by the train station that takes you from Water Street to Long Wharf. They created something called the Vision Trail that would be a walking path through New Haven and biking that included a little cut through that got you along the railroad tracks right by Water Street near State, and it gets you right near where IKEA is in Brewery Street. This cool kind of shortcut. And it was a paved trail put in there. And we've had it for 22 years. The State Department of Transportation has been expanding its rail yard operations. So it said, okay, we're going to get rid of this now because it's in the way the property goes through where we go. We're going to get rid of it. So, of course, all the new urbanists got mad in New Haven because it's just one more example of how, you know, the DOT, Department of Transportation, is sort of always against us on how we want to develop our city for transportation, right? How we design a garage, how we take care of neglected lots. So there was a hearing Markeisha went to where the people were mad at them. But the response has been so interesting because some people, particularly in the Independent, said, well, the DOT just would rather have people leapfrogging rather than have New Haveners gain access to their own waterfront. And somebody, but some other people said who were for this whole biking thing. One guy, Jonathan Hopkins, said, well, the fact that they're just made a two-way separated cycle track on Sargent Drive and they're doing other road improvements right around there to create the Farmington Trail Canal to the – maybe we don't need that cut through anymore. And as somebody else pointed out
– oh, I was about to say, what I think is interesting about that is so it was a walkway for that was made during the Special Olympics. So now we're just thinking about people who bike. We're not thinking about people who walk or who get around in different ways.
I've used it to walk.
No, but what I'm saying to you is we're talking about cycle tracks as a replacement for the trail.
I see.
It's illegal to like walk in the cycle track. You're not supposed to do that.
So you're saying the Vision Trail is important. It is true.
Yeah, it's important for people who just walk.
When I walk to Long Wharf, it's much more direct and I'm not around fast cars if I do that cut through. And it's kind of cool. You walk under the highway to the backs of these rail yards. And then you're quickly on Brewery Street and you feel like, hey, this isn't just a city for cars anymore. But as another commenter pointed out, Markeisha,
I can't remember where it is.
And yeah, lots of people don't remember where it is.
You're on State Street going to the train station, right? And you're at that light right past the Knights of Columbus. If you go left instead onto Water Street, right to your right.
Under the underpass.
If you walk
I know. Mm-hmm. I've seen people.
Wait a minute. By the Knights of Columbus Museum?
Take a left. Go over the bridge. And then off to the right. That's where the trail is.
Oh, correct. You're absolutely.
But you know, the fact that you guys don't know shows that this hasn't been a big deal. It's been sort of inside secret, but it's
Grove
Street pointed out.
That's because it's not well signed, Paul.
Yeah, you're right. And this Grove Street
pointed out. Or well taken care of.
Not long ago, I decided to walk back on the trail, wrote one comment there. But it was not identified, and the area looked horrible. Yeah. Whoever founded the trail has done nothing to make it look worthwhile. It also likely stays right about 10th of a mile or less. This is not a big deal except to a few hobbyists in the protest everything crowd. I think that's overstated. It is a good walkthrough. I think pedestrians count. But he's right. That thing hasn't been kept up. No. It's not some nice trail.
So what was also mentioned is that the trail has, like, where it is now, it actually wasn't, it was in that area, but it wasn't exactly where it is now. So as the rail yard has expanded, the trail has moved.
Zigzag.
The original idea, apparently, was for it to be flexible, but as, and that's this is right. where
you
things have fallen down.
And the train's post office.
This is where, you know, the folks who founded it, where it did fall down, which is as new areas were supposed to be identified, as more attractive routes were to be identified, then the trail could move. Mm-hmm. But because that really hasn't happened, or maybe because there were no other, like, interesting routes identified.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what I think about this particular trail, like, this is the one trail that I know of that takes folks off the street as opposed to putting them in the street. Because we've been very focused about putting specifically people who ride bikes in the street.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do want places to ride or walk that are off the street.
You're so on the money because, you know, anytime because you and I walk. And anytime we walk around that Water Street area, it's treacherous.
It is. You have to kind of decide where you're going to cross the street because there aren't sidewalks in certain places. Right. And so, like, I actually typically don't use the Vision Trail because I was kind of creeped out of the idea of walking on it by myself. I definitely don't do it at night because it looks really dark back there. So, I stay on Waters, which is the proposed path from the DOT. The DOT has basically said, well, what we're going to do is move the trail out to the street. And so what you would have, and the idea behind the trail is to keep people from crossing the street so often. Like, you know, the more times you have to cross the street, the more dangerous it is for you. As a pedestrian.
But how are they planning on connecting the Farmington Canal Trail to that? Because
the way they're doing that, Joe, is they're going on Olive Street, and they have to decide yet.
Which also is considered quite dangerous.
It's very narrow. They're trying to make that. They're trying out a couple different ways you could make it bike and pedestrian friendly on Olive. Then they're going to have it go jag along the real street on Water Street, then go under the street. That's the underpass at Brewery. And that is the way to complete the Farmington Canal Trail, which they are about to do. And by making it with some bike lanes, maybe separated, maybe not. As Marquisha says, that's treacherous for walking. It's not even ideal for biking. It's a tough policy. But so what about another tough question is, what about this protest this week, the May Day protest about immigrant rights? Mm. It marched from the Green on May Day past, do you ever go here, Norma, Fashion Nails right next door to us on Elm Street? What kind of place is that?
That's down here?
Yeah, right next door to us. I've gone there.
I remember when they first started.
But didn't they get in trouble for not paying their workers?
We're going to get to that. But what kind of place is it? Marquisha and Norma have been there. Norma, can you speak in the mic?
I've been there too.
Oh, you have? What do you think of it?
I don't go there anymore because of the not paying the workers thing.
Gotcha.
I remember when they first opened up. Mm-hmm. They were basically almost 2 years without any business. That's how bad business was when they first opened that store down there. Now, obviously, you know, it's doing well. But, you know, they're not paying their workers.
Even if they are paying their workers now, the fact that the owner was like, I'm not hiring Spanish people anymore, I can't go there.
Let's
no
talk
more.
To people about that. So the reason
that was mad offensive.
That's what Christopher Peake's article in The Independent reported. So what happened was this march is going past places they think symbolize injustice. So they go there with the bullhorn and the car horns. They say, this place doesn't pay its workers. What happened was that in 2015, the state cited them for illegally underpaying workers. And what they said was, the guy claimed, I'd been in other states. In those states, you're allowed to count tips toward your salary. I didn't realize you're not allowed to here. I'll pay them back. Since then, they have said he has not broken the rules. So he's saying, I follow the rules now. And he says, I stopped hiring Spanish. This is a quote. That's why I don't hire no more Spanish, because they come sue us like groups protesting outside me. All this complaining and stuff, I don't want to deal with it. And it's safer for me, too, so I don't hire illegals, you know. He says other nail salons hire Hispanic workers. If you go any nail salon, believe me, most of them have Spanish workers there. And why are they still working there? They must be getting paid enough, right?
I've never seen that.
And when I was frequenting that place, they did have Hispanic Latino workers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, they did. And I mean, they also had of whatever Asian descent those folks who work in there as well are there. So there were both. I don't know what it's been since then. So, you know, this was probably a couple of years ago. I always was happy with my service. But at the same time, like, this alludes to two different things that I feel like are interesting things that need to be explored. So remember that the New York Times did the big expose about nail salons and how people are being bussed in, particularly undocumented Asian workers, particularly women, who are, you know, made to work at these places all day long. and with little breaks, not being paid adequately. So, you know, so that's already a problem. So if he's talking about I'm not specifically hiring Latino workers because I know they're going to sue me if I don't pay them correctly, then that's one problem. The other problem, I said one, that means there could be others. And this also is an opportunity for the folks in the immigrant community, particularly our Latino community, to broaden their support. There are workers out there who are not Latino who are being exploited. So if you want this movement to grow, you got to bring in other people who are, because it's seen as just a like a Latino movement. There are Caribbean workers out there, right, documented and undocumented, who are afraid because they know that they have to have their stuff sewed together. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of ours who, you know, she's saying the Caribbean community is concerned. People from, right, Jamaica, people from Trinidad, people from other places who are, right, also have these concerns about being able to get back and forth in between the countries. And this is an opportunity to say, hey, we got your back. You know, it's not just about us. We don't just care about our own. We care about everybody who has a stake in this issue.
And the reason why you see the West Indian community is not saying much is because it's not on the front line for West Indian community, because it's not.
And they also don't want to like put themselves, exactly, out there. They don't want to put themselves in the spotlight.
Yeah, now, man, Trini, listen up. If all little stand up right now, what are they going to stand up for?
Well, thanks for standing up for Pundit Friday, WNAJ Radio. Your home for community radio. Thanks to the best pundits in the media universe, Harry Droz, Babs Rawls Ivy, Markeisha Ricks, Norma Rodriguez Reyes, and that guy who has so many names, but we just call him Joe Ugly when we're signing out here.
Thank you, sir,
everybody, for joining us today in Dateline New Haven. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight with us all weekend long here at WNHH, your home for community radio. Yeah.